Hello and welcome to this episode of UCM Interesting. I'm Danny Rouillet. I host this thing. Thanks so much for checking us out. If you're doing it for free, that's cool, bro. Just we ask that you spread the word. Do some liking, do some commenting, do some sharing, all of that fun stuff. Google Pods, Apple Pods, Spotify, and Amazon Music, all the cool free places that you can be. If you're one of those cool folks that gets to hear this show right away, Patreon.com/FunnyDanny, supporting the team. That makes you the best. We love you. Thank you so much again. Keep spreading the word. At UCM Interesting on the Instagrams, at @interest_pod on the Twitterverse. My guest this week is one of the founders and big bosses at Smathers and Branson. Austin Branson is his name. You can probably figure out where they got the name for the company. How to describe them is actually challenging for me because I'm not in the space, but they are a specific kind of apparel company. They started off kind of majoring in these needlepoint, these handcrafted needlepoint belts, and have expanded their offerings. And what they've done in a short amount of time is pretty remarkable in this really unique space that they've kind of crafted for themselves. They're the big boys, the major market players that we know about in sort of the luxury apparel and clothing space. And they're kind of blazing their own path a little bit. You know, if you've listened to the show at all, how fascinated I am with entrepreneurship and going from idea to reality. I will say, and I'll let Austin tell the story when he joins me here in a moment, but their idea to reality is a really, really cool story. It basically starts at a small liberal arts college in a house with a couple of bros. And next thing you know, they've been doing this for, you know, going on year 18, I think, at this point. But pretty amazing stuff. So Austin will join me here in a moment. But before we get going with some of the details here, it's time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. A moderately passable celebrity impression asking you.
Well, let me tell you something. Austin 316 says you better get your ass to patreon.com/funnydanny. There's a bunch of tears in there, and I'll give you some tears by putting a boot up your butt. There's a dollar tier, two, five, ten, whatever the hell you want to do per month. Support this guy. And that's the bottom line.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin. I mean, you get it, right? I know it's not my best. Whatever. It was just what was on my brain. So let's talk about it. Smathers and Branson starts in 2004, and it's kind of begins as a project for school. And these guys, Austin and his partner, sort of are able to devise a way to not only, you know, use it for school credit to help themselves graduate, but also to kind of get started. And there are some great anecdotes along the way that Austin will share here. But as I said, they've been around for going on year 18 now, since 04. And this apparel company, their origin story, again, I'll let Austin kind of tell it, but you know, they're not publicly traded, so not all the data is readily available. But this is a group that has engendered itself to a couple different segments of the population. So places where college football is massive, right? You could probably think of those off the top of your head, especially SEC and kind of, you know, Southern Midwest part of the country. Now you've got, you know, the Ohio States and Michigans in the North, and the Big Ten obviously substantial there. But for the most part, folks in the SEC, not as much NFL. It's very college football crazed. Alabama, Auburn, I think Clemson. I know that's not SEC at the moment, but, you know, those kinds of places. You get the Southern dude and the Southern lady, that is kind of their marquee thing in terms of sports fandom. So Smathers and Branson, able to offer the actual logo on one of these handcrafted needlepoint belts. It's really an amazing thing. And you look at sort of, and again, I usually try to get as much detail as I possibly can about kind of the industry. Really hard to do that when it comes to this, because, you know, your competitors are different. It's not exactly sort of the same niche. So that's something I want to ask Austin about. So you think of some of these, you know, very preppy kind of luxury brands. You could think of Polo to a degree. Vineyard Vines is in that space. Brooks Brothers a little bit more button up. But then you get sort of the luxury apparel, the Armanis, the Dolce & Gabbanas, and I'm sure there's a million others that I probably should be mentioning, but I'm not because I'm just an uncultured, awkward 42-year-old dude. But you get the point. So this space here Smathers and Branson are in is pretty unique. And their main obstacle at this point is to kind of keep getting their name out there. They've organically grown in a way. They don't have to, you know, borrow and satisfy, you know, their angel investors who gave them X number of millions of dollars to get the product out there. they've been able to grow at their rate. And that's what's so cool about this. They've maintained all of their ownership. And so they can try and fail certain things. And that has been really, really cool and helpful. So if you go to SmathersandBranson.com, very simple, you'll see their incredible catalog of offerings. It began, as I said, a few, you know, several years ago, just with these classic needlepoint belts that are handmade. And just the detail on these things is just fantastic. Well crafted type stuff. A, they look great, but B, and I've got one myself, by the way, but they're really sturdy. They're really nice. They're wearable, you know, like you can beat them up a little bit. Not that you would, I don't know what else you're doing to a belt, but there've been times where my waistline has expanded and it's handled it just fine. It's good craftsmanship and good material in addition to looking really cool the way that they do. And it's unique, right? You're used to, you know, your leather belt or this kind of a thing, the alligator skin, costing a certain amount in that kind of luxury space. This is not sure I got a $5 belt from Target, and it's not I've got a $500 belt that only a certain segment of the population is going to notice. It's kind of that in between. It's not cheap. The craftsmanship is so good, you get it. If you're in, you're in. So they're fighting this information war to make sure that consumers are informed, and they've kind of made themselves sort of indispensable in certain places, like these cottage industries, like folks that golf a lot know about Smathers and Branson, folks that love SEC football know about Smathers and Branson. And it's now kind of the challenge to reach folks at large. And they've got great gift guides, custom built belts, and all sorts of other kind of cool stuff. In addition to, you know, everything from cozies to, you know, golf head covers to wallets, all sorts of really neat stuff. And they've really expanded their product offerings. And really at the end of the day, it's about a couple of guys who had a dream, had a vision, and went from, again, I have an idea, to an actual business. And you know, if you listen to the show at all, again, thank you, but was it a one or an A? I can't remember which one I did. I'll just say one. You know, if you listen to the show, that's what I like. Wait, what was I talking about? Anyway, I got confused. The point is, I'm fascinated by this part of the process. If you've listened to the show at all, it's when people go, I've got an idea, to then make it their business, to then make it their livelihood. And in the case of Austin Branson here, he's done this. This has been his only job in year 18 as one of the bosses of this company. It's really cool. I admire it a ton. So you're really going to like Austin. Enjoy my conversation with Austin Branson. Pumped about my guest this week. Went to high school together. He was a few years behind me, and you always had a feeling he was going to do something, and you didn't know that something was invent really, really cool belts. My guest this week is president and co-founder of Smathers and Branson, Mr. Austin Branson. Austin, thanks for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Danny. Super fun.
So you got to tell the story. I know you've told it a million times. It's like when you get engaged, you have to tell the engagement story 6 million times. But you and your college roommate, you're hanging out at Bowdoin, you're finding yourself, you know, you're probably majoring in like 7 different kinds of literature. Now you've got to figure out, I'm going to run this incredible business. Just go through that founding and go through the story. It's awesome.
Yeah, and needlepoint belt business isn't something that you think about when you're growing up. So the story goes that when I met my wife, current wife, I was studying abroad in Florence, Italy, junior year in college. And for my 21st birthday, she gave me a needlepoint belt that she had made as like a hobby. It's an old school sort of hobby craft, and like your grandmother used to do. And I took that belt with pink elephants and martinis on it and put it on. Didn't really appreciate kind of what she had done to make it a reality, and dutifully wore it around like a good boyfriend, and eventually got enough compliments on it that started asking questions. And my business partner, his girlfriend, had done the same thing. Super big coincidence, totally random. I mean, so fast forward a little while, and we were getting ready to graduate, and we lived in this awful house off campus of Bowdoin, and all the guys we lived with were super entrepreneurial. I think it's kind of the thing that we all do, right? We just throw around dumb ideas. I mean, you did that in college with your, hey, let's do this, let's do that.
Certainly did.
Ours was, I think, the worst of all the ideas to do this thing. And people had like real concepts of like companies that could have been billion-dollar enterprises. We were just, I guess, the most stubborn. And so we actually didn't get real jobs when we graduated. We instead learned to needlepoint, and we went over to Vietnam and taught people their needlepoint. Thought that that was going to be the real thing. And so 17 years later, we've spun this thing out, and we're doing all right.
And it's not just belts now. The amount of that crafted goods, shoes, wallets, kind of everything in between. The craftsmanship is obvious. The thing that I've been amazed by, Austin, is how well you guys have been able to grab those partnerships. I think that's something that's remarkable, and I think people, you know, don't really realize how big a deal it is. Where I have my Washington Nationals belt that you were kind enough to bestow upon me. That's not right. Easy, getting the major league right. thing, the college thing, all that kind of stuff. Walk me through that.
Yeah, no, I mean, so we were 22 at our first trade show or whatever. We were driving around in the car with a backpack full of samples, and we walked into these great men's stores in Nantucket and in Charleston. I mean, you can picture it. They're just classic, super traditional places where you can find some great clothing, accessories, all that stuff. And we just walked in like a couple of idiots and tried to pitch this idea that they'd never heard of. They never thought of it. It wasn't a thing. And for the most part, we got all yeses. The first door we went into was a no, but like the next like 20 or 30 were kind of all yeses, and people, we thought this was off and rolling. But again, we were sort of in our New England bubble that we were familiar with. But as soon as we went to our first trade show and started talking to some Southern guys, if you go in the South, like the men's stores down there, are like the real thing, like people go hang out there, like they have relationships and it's awesome. But they looked at us like, oh, sailboats, not so much. Like, and so we immediately realized that the way to connect in Tuscaloosa or in Montgomery or in Birmingham or in all these great Southern towns was collegiate licensing. And so you put the Crimson Script A on a belt and all of a sudden it means something. And so that was our entree into a lot of the, this whole demographic down there, this SEC country. And that was kind of the first one that we went after. And it was harder than getting into college. I mean, again, we had zero to go on. We were still a startup business, and the licensing companies had never heard, again, it wasn't a thing. So like we really had to work hard, and we got a lot lucky to open those doors, and gradually they did. And collegiate licensing opened, made our company really relevant in the South. And some people think we're like this hardcore Southern company. So we let that go. And then we added Major League Baseball a few years later, again, same story, just going to this big behemoth and trying to explain what we do and why we do it and why why we're relevant. And so we've worked with all four major sports leagues. We have almost 200 college licenses. Yeah. I mean, and again, like that's one of the cool things that we like about our company. Like we're not everything you buy from us, nothing says our name on it. We're not a poster for ourselves. We kind of pitch ourselves as we're telling your story. If you're a Nats fan, awesome. We got that. If you're into Kentucky Bourbon Trail, we work with the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, and we do really cool stuff with all their bourbon bottles on it. Whatever you're interested in, our products kind of explain you, not us. And then that's something kind of unique.
No, it's 100% unique. And I think that's one of the things that sets you guys apart, right? That the diversity of offering when something's that finely crafted, I think is very unusual to have that breadth. It's usually like we make the luxury goods. Here's our three things. And it all, 80% of it is the label. You know what I mean? It's right. like the thing that you're used to. So that's what I wanted to ask you. I think you have two competitors, normal sets of competition. And then the other is, especially as a business, as you kind of alluded to, when you're starting up. And I think getting those licenses obviously is a major step for that. But information, that challenge, knowing that you're there is probably something that is a huge obstacle to kind of get in the consumer's way. And once you are, I think the success has spoken for itself. But who are your competitors in that space, and who, and kind of speak to the informational challenges that you probably are still facing, but really faced at the outset?
Yeah. So, I mean, the actual sort of real business competitors, I think. So when we started, we look at it this way. When we started, there was no one who did this, and for good reason, mm-hmm. I suppose. Sometimes it's kind of a bizarre business that it's not worth anybody's time to be in, but we just saw this little niche. And so we pushed hard there. We've had enough success to have different companies try to come up and do it the same way. It's just, it's a hard thing to do. And honestly, I mean, it's such a labor intensive process, and it's a handcrafted thing. Everything we do is made by hand. And when you're making hundreds of thousands of units a year that are completely made by hand, you have massive room for error. And we get that, but we've gotten good enough at it that it's not a problem. And so it's a hard business to compete in. And we've continued to do well. We deliver products on time. We deliver quality stuff that there's no real reason for people to switch. So it's just been hard to, we've got a pretty good, not perfect, but pretty good foothold over kind of what we do. And we pride ourselves on that. So as long as we keep doing what we're doing, I think we'll be okay. I mean, we've ended up working with a lot of the companies that would want to get involved. I mean, J. Crew, Brooks Brothers, Vineyard Vines, these big brands that theoretically would do it, say, hey, these guys are the best in the world at it. We'll just work with them. And that's the way to deliver this product to our customers. And that's been pretty exciting. And then in terms of the competition of trying to tell our story and make ourselves known, I mean, that's an ongoing battle. And our first way of doing it was through these stores. I mean, everyone says brick and mortar retail is dead and dying, and the pandemic really killed it and allows the nail in the coffin in stores. Our wholesale stores are having the best year they've ever had this year.
Wow.
And those, again, these, maybe it's not the giant department stores you want to walk into and walk around with, and where it's more replicating an online experience, but these specialty boutiques that you can find kind of nice gifts. You can find your, in these southern towns and the coastal New England towns, everywhere. Every time you go to a great place and you walk into that, like that store that just kind of looks different. I mean, that's where we are. And those places are doing great. And they tell our story for us, right? Like they're the ones who introduce us to thousands and thousands of people. And we hope the most convert there, because that in-person shopping experience is great. But eventually it does help to build the brand and build an online presence and make our name something that people remembered.
So when you mentioned the brand and your story as well, when you say Brooks Brothers, every dude knows what that is, right? That's, you know, for the regular folks, that's high end.
Right.
It's luxury. It's classic. It's the craftsmanship. It's, you know, it's, you're going to pay a lot of money, but you're going to get a great suit. That's kind of the idea. Where do you guys fit in? And what I mean is, it's, you obviously have this fine craftsmanship, but there's, it's not this, I don't even know the right words. And I mean, you'll probably laugh at me, but you don't think it's the most luxurious thing in the world, but you also know that it's not, you know, some knockoff in a bargain bin, right? How do you guys fit in with that? You're paying for craftsmanship, which is excellent. It's of the highest level, but you're not necessarily, you know, on German Street in London with, you know, $500 Oxford shoes. You know what I mean? Like, how do you guys fit in there?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, hopefully somewhere right in the middle. I mean, we started with, our belt, and that was our core product, still is our core product. It's what we're kind of most known for. People say the belt guys. And when we started, it was $150, and that's a really expensive belt in anyone's terms. And so we were really worried about how much room there was. I mean, is this a true luxury, or is this just something, one of those like great pieces that you buy, but you can totally build around? And it ends up being the latter. And that, it's a nice gift. I mean, and we haven't jacked up prices too much over the years. I mean, 17 years, we've only gone from $150 to $175. And that's mostly at the encouragement of stores who are like, we can get more for this. There's no price resistance to our customer in this thing. And it's something so special. People love it. We think the price should be there. Meanwhile, like a necktie has gone from $65 to like $120 or something. You know, like it's kind of crazy how much the other stuff has made our stuff seem a little bit less luxury. And so we kind of hope we can walk that line between being something that's not a real lifestyle concern for most of the people. And I mean, again, we have keep introducing lower price point things. I mean, even hats and keychains and the $20 to $30 range. I mean, that kind of thing that kind of keeps it all balanced. So we want to be something that everything, all of our leather is Italian, right? All of our thread comes from this incredible company in France. All of our materials are the best we can possibly find in the world. Like, we're the company that we switched to more expensive leather halfway through the business with no complaints from customers, just because we knew it was the right thing to do. We continue to do things to improve the product as much as possible. So we want to be uncompromising on quality, and all of our customer service is done by amazing college graduates who have smart conversations with folks. When you call in, if you call in the holidays, I'll answer the phone, right? I mean, when things are busy, and that's like a super fun thing about running a company like ours, where you try to just do the best you can all the time.
So you mentioned some of the partnerships that you guys have done, and, you know, thinking of from a stock market perspective, a lot of these big companies, the choice is either to build it or buy it. Right. And a lot of times, as you said, it's kind of probably easier for them to buy it instead of trying to compete in a space where you've already sort of established a niche. So I'm wondering, have there been times where you get maybe 90% down the road or something like that, and you go, you know what? That's not us. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't do this partnership. Because to me, it's a no-brainer to do, as you said, J.Crew, Brooks Brothers, Vineyard Vines, these established brands in this space, and it's got to help you with that kind of association. Have there been some where you go, you don't have to pick on any company or anything, but when you've gone, you know what? We shouldn't do that. That's not us.
No, I guess the demographic who wants to work with us, I guess, is pretty self-selecting, right? I mean, the needlepoint interested folks are just haven't put us in a situation where we identify too much or don't want to be associated. I mean, politics, I guess, is one thing where we've always offered like Republican and Democratic products, and they were kind of a thing, I guess, from, again, when we started in 2004, 2005, there was just kind of good spirited partisan support for your thing. You could buy something with a donkey, you could buy something with a Republican with an elephant on it. It almost turned itself off and people just stopped wanting to go there. And so we didn't want to push, and we've kind of stayed away from doing campaign related stuff. And that's just too ugly of a world, I guess, right now to get involved with. But other than that, no, I mean, we'll generally work with most folks who are interested in working with us.
How do you do new products? Because you mentioned you started with the belts, and again, they're just smashes out of this world. But now you go to Smathers and Branson, there's a catalog. I mean, the amount of offerings, and again, I want to get to that, how you have this breadth, but it's all handmade and handcrafted. The specificity is remarkable. Yeah. How do you decide on new products?
I mean, it's fun. And then again, we did it probably really stupidly for a long time. And Peter, my business partner, and I would, I mean, we've been in the past 15 years, 16 years, we've been to Vietnam over 30 times on these kind of week to 2 week long trips where we go work on product development and everything. And we've done it all ourselves. And again, we're two kids from a liberal arts school without fashion or design or any sort of experience. And so we're making it up as we go. And we will always come up with random ideas. I mean, we sell Christmas stockings and Christmas ornaments. And we just launched like a really nice loafer. And we have kind of things all across the board. Some are really simple. Some are really complicated. Plenty have failed, kind of bombed. And that's fine. We can, the way we do things, we can turn them on and off and see what works. We get a lot of feedback from customers, right? But I mean, needlepoint is one of these interesting things where we haven't really gotten out of that. That's our niche. That's what we want to be known for. We don't really want to just start making pants and golf shirts and things because we just slap our brand on stuff. We just, the thing we are good at is the best in the world at making needlepoint. And so, I mean, the shoes we're starting to make are incredible. And we're like, that could be, if we do it right. And so far we have, like, one of the real turning points of the business is that's a category that explodes. Christmas stockings is a really nice thing to do. Not going to build like a massive new brand around Christmas stockings, I don't think, but that's the fun thing. Some are really meaningful and some are just nice to have and add some interesting depth to what the company does.
So you mentioned your business partner, Peter. I just, in talking to the other entrepreneurs that I've been able to, been fortunate enough to have conversations with, kind of doing this show here for a year and change, I always am fascinated with some of those dynamics. And here's what I mean. You guys are two super sharp, smart guys. You're not going to give yourself enough credit for it, but you had this vision and this drive, and what you guys have done to this point is amazing. And I'm so excited and proud to see where you guys are going to go. But I imagine it's not always like, hey, you know, good morning. We certainly agree about everything today and we'll agree tomorrow. And we agreed the other day. I mean, there's, you know, there's obstinance, and with your, if I may say, your St. Olmans education, we are just taught to debate and disagree and stand up for ourselves. I wonder about some of those and how, you know, who wins out, how does it work? And those dynamics of you guys are going into this breach together and it's amazing, but there's got to be moments of disharmony.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, of the seven guys we lived with and all the kind of entrepreneurial types, I mean, he and I might, Peter and I might on paper, like, I just don't think we couldn't have done this with anyone else and lasted. And that's, we have a very unique relationship. We certainly don't agree. And we're not even like the right brain, left brain entrepreneur types, right? You have these companies who are started by guys who don't relate at all, but like do their thing really well. We're both just kind of like middle brain. We don't really do anything super well, but together we have enough overlap and we coach each other into making less bad decisions most of the time. And so we've just kind of daily we'll have little disagreements and we'll just kind of listen to each other. And we just kind of, it's a very healthy marriage of business partners. And we have just stayed grown closer and closer and know that we're have the business in mind with everything we're doing.
How big do you want to get? And what I mean is, as you guys are expanding, it's your pace, you control this thing, but you also want to stay true to who you are. And I think that's very clear. That's come through very clear during this conversation, Austin. But what's the point of, it's like that, it's kind of the old deal with like a band that gets really successful and then the original fans get mad. Like, what was the point of all that? Like, you wanted them to be successful, right? But now it's like, oh, look, the early stuff when they were in a garage in Brooklyn. Well, now they're successful. Right. What's kind of that sweet spot, that tuning fork for you guys, like as to how big you could be and still be true to who you are?
I mean, I think, so we don't know. We certainly aren't the company that started to sell. We are the opposite of that. We're a very old school company. We've never borrowed money. We've started as small as we possibly could and bootstrapped. We're the company that placed a small order, sold it all, but we're able to buy more. We're able to buy more and just grew sustainably over the years. And as long as we can deliver the products we want to deliver them authentically and maintain the company culture that we've established, that's kind of the way to do it for us. I don't think we have an absolute growth goal or metric of something we're striving for. When we were seniors at Bowdoin, the president of the college was super supportive of us doing this crazy idea. And he was nice enough to bring in a few friends to do sort of on-campus career planning stuff, but with the side project of being able to sit and chat with us quickly. And one of them was like a big CEO of a huge, like the major shoe companies. Mm-hmm. And so he had retail experience and he sat in a room and listened to us kind of talk about our idea. And he was like, okay, well, that sounds really neat. You probably have about $100,000 of lifetime sales in that idea, like in the lifetime of that company, no more than $100,000. Well, that's disappointing. We thought it was better than that. And so we surpassed that pretty quickly. And so everything beyond then has been sort of gravy. And so we just keep trying to maintain what we can deliver on. If we can keep growing, keep having products that work, keep growing the things that we already do. It's a pretty simple formula. We're very old school where we've never borrowed money. We've just tried to keep on top of our skis and not get out in front of ourselves and cause any big trouble to the company. I mean, we'd love this just to be something that sustains itself and is able to grow. And I mean, if I can be an old man wheeled into our office and the guys let me look at samples every once in a while and they don't and stay involved, I think that'd be super fun. We're not the guys seeking a unicorn valuation and trying to make a quick exit. I mean, that's just not our thing.
I'd be tempted to send the occasional balance sheet to that one CEO, by the way. Hey, there's our Q3 numbers. Have a great day. Anyway, I ask this of everybody, Austin. So take your time, think about it. Give me a high moment, a touchdown, end zone spike, maybe a taunting penalty, and then give me an oh my God, what have we done moment.
So the oh my God, what have we done moment is, I guess it's maybe anticlimactic, but it's before we even started. So we were seniors in college. This was like our senior project, and we were able to work our way into two course credits for independent studies on launching this business. Uh-huh. One with an econ professor, like a business plan, and one with an art professor, because we were, again, completely unqualified to do any of this, that we were saying, hey, we need to be able to make this stuff look good. So we spent a lot of time senior year working on this, and we had simultaneously connected with this guy who we thought was our lifeline in Vietnam, and over completely broken English and almost no experience on his part or our part, we were making progress, or so we thought. And so this man in Vietnam had ended up making product samples, and Peter moved back to his summer house where he grew up year-round up in Maine. He taught tennis in the summertime to make summer money, and that was kind of his half of the opening investment in the company. So he wanted one last summer doing that to save up before moving down to DC and live in my parents' basement with me. The samples were delivered to him in Maine, and he gave me a call in like July. He was moving down in September. He's like, Austin, I think we got to get jobs. This is really bad. We're both big optimists, but I'm always the never-ending optimist. And I said, Peter, come on. No matter how bad they are, we'll be fine. We'll figure it out. It's the first round. Just forget, throw them away. And he said, I'm not going to throw them away, but I'll bring them down. I don't know why he didn't think this to mail them to me, but he didn't. So he moved down in September and unpacked his bags. And I said, oh, can I see those, by the way? Where are we? And he showed them to me. And I said, oh, my God, we got to get jobs, man.
We got to get jobs.
what are you doing here? And he said, Austin, you said it's going to be okay. I was like, it's not going to be okay. This is awful. Everything got better from there. But that was probably my most scared moment, other than March of last year when I thought the retail world was going to fall apart. But so that was a scary moment. And touchdown spike taunting is harder because, I mean, again, we're this weird company where we have so many little things that add up to a success. I mean, all the, like you said, like these partnerships that we work with are something that most people point to, like you did, and say, oh my gosh, it's so neat that you work with these people. I mean, the golf side of our business is, I love playing golf, and a lot of our customers just think we're a golf company, right? And so that's their passion. And so if you spend time playing golf and travel the country or world and go to pretty much any of the top golf clubs in the world, you see our stuff, and you can go stand at the first tee of most golf clubs, and one guy out of every couple foursomes will be rocking a belt as he goes off. And I mean, it's just been fun seeing it, like this total hidden passion project of something that no one really thought was going to go anywhere. And you can just be walking down the street somewhere pretty random and, hey, look at that guy. It's pretty awkward looking at guys' waists all the time, walking around and you get caught with their eyes and their torso. It's not a great thing, but anyways, I mean, just seeing some of the visible signs of it working. I wouldn't even call it success, but just the progress we're making is pretty fun.
Yeah, I can't even imagine walking down the street going, my company made that, and it's on somebody's waist, and I think that'd be so cool. Austin, congrats on all your success, dude. It's well-deserved. You're super modest about it. You're also interesting as hell, buddy. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you very much to my guest, Austin Branson, smathersandbranson.com. We got to get jobs. That's like my favorite. That's my favorite line. That's one of my favorite lines that any guest has had, as just in terms of a catchphrase or something memorable from an episode. A lot of things I want to pull out of that conversation with Austin, but that the story of the founding is great, isn't it? Just a neat thing. It started with a random coincidence that both girlfriends got, you know, Austin and Peter, his partner, these needlepoint belts and worked on it. Like, well, this is neat. I wonder if it's a business. And then it becomes one, you know, their first sample, as you might imagine, their first, you know, product test or prototype, whatever you want to call it, was not up to snuff. And they're sitting there going, oh my God, we got to get jobs. That is one of those moments that I think so many different people have faced, right? Where you've gone 99% of the way and there's your hiccup or there's your thing where you got to go, you know, I got to shelve this. My own personal anecdote, this is true. This is a totally true thing. Several years ago, I had a business idea. This is totally true, 100% of a thing. And I was convinced that this was a winner. I thought I'll be able to do this on the side, keep hosting my shows, keep doing stand-up comedy on the side, but I'm going to make this thing happen. I had a connection. My sister-in-law was intimately involved in the world of kind of the web design and graphics and things like that, and had all these connections for developers and stuff. And I had this idea for an online business. I'm not going to tell you what it is, just in case we ever want to come back to it. But I spend the money. I spend the money on a corporation. I spend the money on licenses and all this other kind of stuff. And as we're kind of going forward, I'm doing all the different design things. And, you know, we're walking through this together. We've got a partnership. We've got a business, an idea. And we keep going and going and going. And I've spent enough money. And then we kind of get to this crossroads where there's kids and there's not enough time. And, you know, these setbacks start to happen and we lose all the momentum. And it was one of those things where if we were super, super committed to it, you know, if I didn't have the other things that I was doing in my life, if I didn't have, as I said, if I didn't have kids, wife, you know, home stuff, if I didn't have the radio show, stand up, and sort of just the way my calendar is tied up, who knows if I would have done it? Who knows if it would have been successful, by the way? It probably wouldn't have been, to be honest with you. Most things are not successful. But it was one of those deals where we got to that kind of point. And that crossroads sort of led us to shut it down. And it cost a lot of money to shut down, by the way. And it was just a pain in the butt to sort of deal with some of those logistical processes. But that's kind of the way of it. Everybody gets to that point. And they pushed through and they found a way to kind of keep their dream going and so on. So I love that answer from Austin. It was very relatable to me. We got to get jobs is a 10 out of 10. Again, the story of their founding, we kind of touched on that. It's sort of a class project that ballooned into something really, really special. I thought that was really neat. I'm fascinated as well. I talked about this one of my earlier episodes with another St. Almond's grad. I was a couple years ahead of me, my buddy Teddy Sullivan. He and his partner were very complementary in their skill sets. Teddy, sort of, again, the entrepreneur, the, you know, sort of unbridled, you know, customer facing, let's go forward type deal. He partnered with an engineer and that really worked, right? That sort of dynamic. Well, with Peter and Austin, it's different. It's not as if, you know, Peter is... And you know, an artist or a guy that went to you know, the Fashion Institute of New York, and Austin was, you know, some other kind of thing. They are kind of similar guys in their background and some of their interests and commonalities, but they've made that partnership work. I thought that was a fascinating dynamic and answer when it comes to how you guys approach these sorts of things, you know, key decisions, and again, their autonomy, and they're not beholden to a bunch of investors and a bunch of other folks. Means that they can fail together. And I think Austin had a great perspective on that when it comes to it, right? Where we can try and we can have something not work. And here's the thing, most of their stuff has worked. Most of their stuff has worked really, really well. When he mentioned, you know, the kind of the Christmas offerings, he was like, well, yeah, let's give it a shot. Hey, here's a new little market segment for us. Is that the entirety of the business? Of course not. But you're able to capitalize on that folks want, you know, kind of a unique Christmas stocking or whatever it happens to be, these unique gifts. And I think that's really what's at the core of Smathers and Branson is it's a unique gift. It's not an everyday, you know, my kid's going into fifth grade. I got to make sure I, you know, get him a belt that he's going to grow out of. That's kind of not their niche. It's the, we know you love fill in the blank, Georgia football. So boom, here is this way to sort of express that. And it's functional. It's an everyday thing, but it's a really nice everyday thing. And kind of carving out that niche for themselves, I think is really, really cool. And I'm excited to see where they go as they continue to grow, but they're growing at their pace. And I think that's what's so awesome about Smathers and Branson. So I think you guys are awesome too. Thanks for checking out the show. Thanks again to my guest, Austin Branson, smathersandbranson.com. And check it out for yourself. It's, again, their offerings are so unique, so diverse, massive. They have a huge catalog. You can even design your own and do a bunch of cool stuff with that for the fan in your life. You can be a fan of anything, whether it's sports, whether it's America, whether it's beer, whatever you want to do, you could put that on a belt or a keychain or something like that. Really, really cool stuff that they do there at smathersandbranson.com. Thank you to my producer, Andrew Russell, as well. He had to clean up a decent amount this time. I only screwed up a few different times. We had a phone issue too, as well. But you're never going to know it because he's really good at making things okay. Thank you to you guys as well, as always, for checking out the show. Patreon.com/FunnyDan. You want to support the team. Otherwise, you can wait a couple weeks like the rest of the unwashed masses. Amazon Music, Apple Pods, Google Play, and Spotify. All of those cool places. Keep sending us guest ideas. Keep sending us feedback. Like, comment, share, all of that fun stuff. At You Seem Interesting on the Instagrams. At Interest_Pod on the Twitterverse. Until next time, all of you seem interesting.